Welcome back, and that is the great, late, great Otis Spann. It ain't nobody's business if I do. One of the great bluesmen of all time died on this day in 1970, so we remember him through his music here on the Mark Steiner Show on this day. So I want to welcome all of our guests today. We are grabbing here a subject that is coming to Morgan State University this weekend in a conference that is, I think, a very important conference, one that we've been kind of following with other people in this community, members of the Black Humanist Association here in Baltimore and D.C. And this conference coming to Morgan is dealing with philosophical atheism and the worlds of faith here at Morgan State University. And it's a huge, it's a fascinating history and a complex history. And we're going to delve into today with our guests, some here in studio and some joining us by phone. We're joined in the studio by Dr. Joe Pettit, who is Associate Professor of Philosophy and Religious Studies here at Morgan State University and a Religious Studies Advisor here at the university. Good to see you again, Joe. Welcome.
Thanks.
I just lost my headphones. They're back in. There we go. Sorry about that, folks. Kimberly Veal joins us. She's Vice President of the Black Skeptics Group. And Kimberly, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
The Reverend Delman Coates is joining us. He'll be here for this conference as well this weekend. The man is everywhere. He's senior pastor of Mount Enon Baptist Church in Clinton, Maryland, in Prince George's County. And, of course, he's candidate for lieutenant governor, running on the ticket with Delegate Heather Mazier. And Reverend Delman Coates, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on, Mark.
Always good to have you with us.
Yes, thanks.
Next time we have a political discussion, but not today.
Right.
And we're here, and if I mispronounce your name, doctor, please correct me. Dr. Sikivu, do I have that right?
Yes.
Good. Dr. Sikivu Hutchinson, who is Executive Director of the Black Skeptics Group. He's written the book Moral Combat, Black Atheists, Gender Politics, and Values Wars. And welcome to the program as well. Good to have you with us.
Thanks.
And you all can join us here as we enter this, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages, or you can tweet me at Mark Steiner, and we will check what you have to say there, 410-319-8888. So let me begin, if I can just turn to the conveners here, and you would be one, Joe. Talk a bit about where this conference came from and just to lay that out for our listeners so they know what's happening this weekend, then we'll delve into the meat of this world.
Right. The conference is the second conference in second annual conference in philosophy and HBCUs that we have started here at Morgan State University in an effort to cultivate the study of philosophy at historically Black colleges and universities. It's hard to find philosophy departments in HBCUs, and we also need to create the grounds to bring out new philosophers from HBCUs. And we hope by making philosophy more visible and exciting here at Morgan State University that this is something that we can contribute to a wider effort. And this year's conference is on philosophical atheism and communities of faith because we wanted to look at the question of the extent to which philosophical atheism is engaged within not only African-American communities of faith, but wider communities of faith. How much are people able to talk about it? What role does it play in people's thinking? And we've brought an exciting group of scholars to campus to discuss this issue and to hopefully engage both students and faculty who will be coming to the conference and people from the wider community who will attend the conference. It's from 9 o'clock till about 5:15. We have four sessions, I'm assuming that we should be able to find the schedule for the conference on the department website for Morgan State University's philosophy department. If you can't, we'll have it up there by 10:30.
So, Kimberly Veal, you're coming to this conference, correct?
That is correct.
Yes. So I'm curious about what you expect out of this. I mean, this is a fascinating subject because of all the communities in America, the African American community, maybe one of those who's most deeply steeped in religion, but it's a very complex question over the last 400 years, which we'll get into. There has also been this plethora of people in the history of American and African American iconography who have been skeptics, from Frederick Douglass to A. Philip Randolph to Lorraine Hansberry and Neil deGrasse Tyson now, and many more that I could mention. So I'm curious as you what you expect out of this and what you want to bring to this conference.
Well, what I'm expecting out of this conference is our ability to build bridges and to be able to show that we actually have more in common than difference. And one of our main objectives is to build those bridges, build this networking, build a support base for one another so that we can further social justice in our communities. Because, again, these are issues that affect all of us across the board. So we're trying to find a common core from which we can work.
And, Delman, how do you see this?
Well, I want to commend Morgan for this conference and for this conversation, because I think it helps to complicate the narrative of what the African-American community in particular and the American tapestry looks like. You know, so often we tend to reduce our history and our current narrative to religious communities and oftentimes Christian communities or Judeo-Christian faith traditions. And so I think the value of this conference is that it helps to complicate the narrative of the African-American community. We know that what makes our country so great is that people have freedom of and from religion. It's one of the things that I affirm and value as a Christian in America. And so it helps us to broaden the tapestry of the African-American community, to see those across various faith traditions and those who have skeptics and those who aren't a part of any particular faith community. I think this is an awesome contribution to help us to see ourselves in the broad diversity in which we are today.
And let me turn now to Dr. Sikivu Hutchinson. And I mean, because this subject, I'm interested between what could go on here in terms of the gap between religious people and non-religious people, and the history of that. Because, you know, I think it's a very intense field. Because I think I've seen some of the stuff you've written, others have written about the way some people who are African American and also kind of religious skeptics are treated within the community, as well as what people just live with. We're saying, oh, you know, if you live a great life, you take care of your children, oh, you must be a great Christian. And those things really do happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's legion, unfortunately, within African American communities, this presumption that all African Americans are religious, that we're all, you know, steeped in the trajectory of the Black church, that we all subscribe to the tenets and ideologies and political orientation of the Black church. Over the past several years, African-American atheists, freethinkers, skeptics, agnostics, and secularists have really come forward and attempted to push the agenda and say that there is a very robust tradition of African-American secularism that is steeped within Black liberation struggle. So this is not something that is emanating from a European-American perspective and orientation. Huh. This is coming from a civil rights resistance and liberation struggle perspective that is really oriented towards unpacking the contradictions of American democracy, the contradictions of the Enlightenment, the contradictions of a nation that has always claimed to be steeped in justice and the inalienable right of equality for all, but in actuality has always been predicated on the theft and dehumanization of Black bodies and Black labor. And so African-American secularists like Douglass and like A. Philip Randolph and like James Forman and Zora Neale Hurston and Nella Larson, and the list goes on, have always been within a more radical tradition that is absolutely aligned with a more religious civil rights resistance tradition. So I think that this conference is extremely signal, extremely relevant and timely when it comes to the paradoxes that 21st century African Americans are living under. The fact that we have the highest rates of mass incarceration, and yet we have an African American elite president.
You know, I think that let me push this back a little further, what you were just saying, Sikivu, and have everybody chime in on this. This is the complexity of it all. I mean, you know, because for a long time in American history, and I'll start with Delman and then go back to Kimberly on this first. I mean, for a long time, kind of the history of America, the Black houses of worship were like war rooms, whether it was in the abolitionist movement or whether it was in the civil rights movement, that galvanized people to fight against slavery, segregation, racism. It became the place in Sunday schools where people not only studied the Bible but actually learned how to read and write and skills that were not available anywhere else. And so there was this whole intertwined piece, even in the abolitionist movement, as I said earlier, the church was deeply involved, as well as the people who left the church and were skeptics about this world. I mean, Frederick Douglass started as a minister and then left the Zion Church and declared himself a skeptic, as did many others. So, I mean, this is kind of the groundwork, I think, that lays in, Delman, the kind of complexity of it all.
Well, absolutely. And unfortunately, those who are part of skeptics or atheists, they have been, for many people, written out of the narrative, whether explicitly or implicitly, in people's mind when they think about the struggle of African American people in this country. Many people tend to reduce those advocates and those who participated in our freedom struggle to those in the church. If we're not careful, what happens today is we know that many on the political right look for and use certain wedge issues to divide our community. We've seen this on a range of issues politically all across the country. And so the reason this conversation has value is because it helps us to understand the broad coalition that is necessary within the African-American community and across communities in order for us to fight for freedom, justice, and equality. We need a broad coalition that includes a variety of communities of faith, black Muslims, black Hindus, black Buddhists, black atheists, skeptics, agnostics, Christians as well, everyone. And so it is important for us to reclaim those aspects of our collective narrative and history that in the mind of many have been eliminated or excluded.
Kimberly?
Most definitely. And again, many of those, the movements that you were speaking on, they started out as secular movements. And what happened is by the church being the, you know, focal point of our community, that was basically the only place where we could meet without stirring up, you know, suspicion. And, you know, if you go back and you look at that particular time during the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s, the majority of the churches did not necessarily support Martin Luther King. It was a small percentage of churches that supported Martin Luther King. However, he had people around him like A. Philip Randolph, Bayard Rustin, and others in the community, and many of them were free thinkers or skeptics or what have you. And, you know, definitely we need to build up a coalition or find, again, that common core from which we can work, because a lot of the issues that were furthered or progressed on in that time has been rolled back. And there are a lot of things that, you know, we actually need to address. However, I do agree that we need to come together and work on, you know, an agenda that can basically further the black community and better for the betterment of all of us.
So this is, you know, I think a complex subject that I think is not something that gets the light of day very much, because it's hard to kind of put your hands around, because it can very easily, I think, slip into anti-religious rhetoric. You know, it can slip into we don't need religion, or it can slip into the other way. I mean, you know, I was at a gathering the other day with people who are fighting for the right to public housing in Baltimore, and running that, and somebody got up and they made the said we need to do this in the name of Jesus Christ as black people. And I saw some people in the audience who were, I know, people who were African-American who were religious skeptics, to put it mildly, and I know there were people in that audience who were Muslims. One imam I know kind of winced and wanted to say something but didn't. And I think that that's part of it. I mean, because there's an assumption, I think, we'll come right back to Joe Pettit, but there's an assumption, I think, Sakibu, that when you have any gathering of African-Americans, that everybody's a Christian and that everybody believes in Jesus. Even the majority of African-Americans do believe in Jesus and believe in God and believe in an intelligent creator. that the assumption made that everybody is.
Right, and obviously that's very insidious when it comes to intersectionality within African-American communities. I mean, we're very diverse, we're a very hybrid community. We have a lot of different political affiliations, in addition to a lot of different religious affiliations. So, you know, the problem is that, as Kim pointed out, that the black church has been such a political bedrock for coalition building across generations within our heritage. And in some of our communities, because we are so deeply hyper-segregated and there are no public spaces and collective meeting spaces, that churches become the default meeting space. And we are really sort of frozen out of alternative gathering spaces, of alternative discourses, because you have to start with that foundation of, you know, the black church as being the center and the focal point. And obviously that pertains to political mobilization when we look at both the local and the national basis, and the fact that many political coalitions and many political groups emanate, you know, from black church organizing. That, you know, you have very prominent, very charismatic ministers, prominent congregations that get people to assemble and to really get on point, you know, when it comes to social justice and other issues that have deep resonance for African Americans. So that, in my mind, is a critical issue that needs to be unpacked, you know, that we are living in times of intense hyper-segregation, resegregation.
Resegregation, correctly. Right.
Amongst African Americans. So we are really sort of shut out of some of the spaces that European Americans interact with and enjoy.
So, Delman, how do you see that? Maybe we go to break here. Delman, you there?
Yes, I'm here. I think he's absolutely right. We definitely need to unpack this. And I think one of the main things that needs to be unpacked, and I think this was mentioned earlier, is this sort of mythology that surrounds the involvement of the black church in our freedom struggles. I think the reality is that in as much as I value the social justice tradition of African-American Christianity, most churches were not involved, and most black clergy were not involved in this struggle. I mean, Dr. King was kicked out of the National Baptist Convention, USA Incorporated, precisely because of that work. And so this historiographic narrative that the black church has been at the forefront of our freedom struggle is one that needs to be deconstructed and demythologized. Certainly, it's a valuable tradition. It's a tradition that I affirmed, and that's, you know, a part of my own work. And so once we deconstruct that, we can help complicate and nuance the narrative of players that were involved in our freedom struggle, both within the African-American community and those outside of the African-American community as well. And I think this, you know, this is critically important in order for us to make the kind of necessary progress we need to make today.
We're going to have a very brief break, and we're going to go out here with one more Otis Band piece, Spann's Boogie. Passed away on this day in 1970, one of our great blues singers, and we'll come right back to Julianne Hing and our other guests here to, not Julianne Hing, that's my next hour, I'm sorry, with Joe Pettit and Kimberly Veal to wrestle these same issues. Stay with us. Otis Spann, In the Dark. And one of the things we're trying to do is to get our way out of the dark today by talking about this conference coming up at Morgan State University this weekend called the Philosophical Atheism and Communities of Faith Conference this Saturday at Morgan State University at the University Student Center, room 212, from 9 to 5 p.m. You can get more information by emailing Anika Simpson, that's A-N-I-K-A, Anika.Simpson, Anika.Simpson, at morgan.edu. All that will be on our website. And we are joined here by one of the conveners, one of the people in that conference, Dr. Joe Pettit, Associate Professor of Philosophy and Religious Studies here at Morgan State University, Religious Studies Advisor at the university, Kimberly Veal, Vice President of the Black Skeptics Group, the Reverend Delman Coates, Senior Pastor at the Mount Enon Baptist Church in Clinton, Maryland, and candidate for Lieutenant Governor on the ticket with Delegate Heather Mazier, and Dr. Sikivu Hutchinson, Executive Director of Black Skeptics Group. His book is Moral Combat, Black Atheists, Gender Politics, and Values War. The number here is 410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones and get a listener's thought and come back to terrific guests we did not hear from in the last 5 minutes. And Reverend Daki Napata, you're on the air.
Yeah, God bless you, and thank you for having this discussion. And I was listening, and I didn't intend to call, but the brother said something that motivated me to call. And that is that, you know, having been a student at Morgan, studied religious science and the like under Dr. Herb Evans, as well as chairman of the philosophy department, Dr. Richard McKinney, and many others that were in classrooms, not necessarily religious related, but informed my journey. The point I'm making is this, that I think it is a fallacy, in my opinion, my humble opinion, but I think expert opinion, to suggest that there were churches that were not activist-oriented. Obviously, there were churches not as activist-oriented as Dr. King and the Social Gospel and the Goon Squad and people like that in Baltimore and other places around the country, including the South. My grandfather was a Baptist minister and a business owner and a farmer. I'm saying it to say that in the movement or in revolution, you need people who fuel your tank so that you can go forth and fight, and then you have people who are the fighters who take the fight to the streets and to speak truth to power, whether they're black or the allies they had, like the Quakers and others who I worked with. And so I'm saying that as we look at this notion of the spirituality of black people, not just the religiosity of black people and the denominations and the like, he's correct in saying there were people who weren't as motivated or involved or on the side, on the right side necessarily. But he's incorrect, I believe, when he says that there were many churches that were not involved, because in a racist, classist society, just to maintain one's wholeness and sanity is an act of activism and an act of revolutionary love. So I just want to throw that out there, and he can disagree, and that's fine. But I think I'm right.
So, Reverend Akira Napati, you always raise really deep issues when you call on the program. I appreciate that. Let me ask, go first to Kimberly Veal and let you kind of tackle that, and then Delma Coates will raise it, and then we'll wind up here with Joe Pettit, okay?
Okay.
Sure.
Kimberly, go ahead.
Well, if you go back and you look at the history will support what was stated earlier, that there was only a small minority of churches that actually supported Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement. Many of them were satisfied with the status quo, and they didn't want to necessarily, you know, rock the boat. You know, however, you know, there are religious people, people in communities of faith that participated in the civil rights movement, in some cases in deference to what their pastors or religious leaders may have told them, because they understood that the fight was greater than, you know, personality conflicts or ideological conflicts. However, history does show that these movements were secular in nature.
And Delma, how would you respond? I think you made one of those comments earlier as well.
Sure. Well, I think that the statement that the caller made actually makes my point. I don't think we're really disagreeing here. I'm basically saying that I think history attests to the fact that most black pastors and most black churches were not active participants, and certainly, and in many instances, discouraged black pastors from participating in the civil rights movement. I don't think this is an issue of dispute. And so I think that in attempting to deconstruct that narrative, it helps to contextualize this romantic notion that black churches and therefore black pastors are the prevailing voices for determining our past and our future direction. I've seen this in my own work, that we tend to make assumptions that the voices of black clergy or black pastors necessarily define where the people are and where the community is on a given issue. And I have found that this is not the case. I have found that there's actually more power in the pews than there is in the pulpit. We've seen this in Maryland on issues of marriage equality, for example, where people assumed that the voices of a few quite a few vocal clergy leaders necessarily described where the people are. And I just think that it's important for us to nuance and to complicate our narrative, our historical narratives, because it provides the framework for where we're going to go in the future.
Joe, how would you wrestle with this before we go back to the phones?
Well, we could talk about history. Historically, one of the reasons King was locked out of some churches was his embrace of Gandhi. The churches weren't ready to have a conversation about whether a Hindu leader could have something important to offer to the political movements in the United States. You could talk about the present. My students, just yesterday, we were looking at some verses in Isaiah 3 and chapter 3 and chapter 10. The spoil of the poor is in your houses. The Lord enters into judgment with the elders and princes of his people. What do you mean by crushing the faces of the poor? And my students thought this was fantastic. And then I asked them if they had ever heard anybody talk about stuff like this in their churches. And they said no, they hadn't heard much political activism in their churches. I think the political dimension is important and the philosophical dimension is important. You can't separate them. Few things are more important to being human than being able to think for yourself. That's what universities are about. That's what our department is about. And I think one of the things that this conference and the guests today on the show are able to point out is that there has been a history in the black community of people who think for themselves, look at religion, and find it wanting. At the same time, they use that same power to think for themselves, and they look at the political realities, and they find them especially wanting. And the commitment to not simply giving in to authority, whether the authority is a religious authority or a political authority, a clergy or politician, and instead standing up and saying, I've thought about this, I look at it, and it's wrong, and it's got to change, is really important. And I think that's why you can't separate the philosophical and the political dimensions from each other. That said, it doesn't have to be an antagonistic relationship. It is not the atheists who are insisting that you can't be religious. And I don't think a lot of religious people are going to be anti-atheists as long as everybody plays by the same rules, which is let's think carefully with each other and learn from each other.
Let me go back to the phones here. A number of people calling in and see if we can get a couple of calls in here before we have to move to the next discussion and encourage you all to get here this Saturday to Morgan State University. Let's go to 410-319-8888. Reverend Meredith, you're on the line.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so happy that this conversation is happening. I'm very familiar with Dr. Sakibu's work and with Kim and Reverend Coates, and I think this is an awesome conversation. And I just wanted to just say that one of the issues that traditionally with the black church, a lot of black free thinkers and black humanists, and I call myself a black humanist, have is how white supremacy has really been transmitted oftentimes by the church, particularly in the images of divinity. And this has, and when people wake up to this, this starts to answer a lot of questions about how black people feel about themselves, our self-images, what we deem as beautiful, correct, and right, versus the things that we may have been taught in church, which are literally antithetical to how we live our lives and who we are just as black people. And I think that we need to start questioning a lot of what we are seeing and hearing from these pulpits. Does it work for us? Will it make us happy? Will it bring us to a better life? Will it bring us freedom and liberation? I think when we start to delve into those questions, the black humanists and the black free thinkers and atheists and agnostics really have a lot to contribute to that conversation. We ought to come together and listen. So that was what I had to say today. Thank you so much.
Reverend Meredith, it's always great to hear your voice. Thank you so much for calling in. And Gay wrote in just now, as someone who does not identify as a Christian nor any other religious sect, I sometimes feel like an alien in Baltimore. On the occasion that I have revealed my religious beliefs, I've been met with the same response, quote, oh, you have to know Jesus, end quote, or something along that line. I once had a discussion with a friend of a friend who said upon learning that I was a non-believer that, quote, I have to go to church to make sure I do the right thing, end quote. I said, well, I guess that's the difference between you and me. I don't have to go to church to do the right thing. Many people believe if you aren't Christian, you must be amoral. Impala, who I know is African-American woman and very active in this community, who sent that thought in. And let me get one more thought in here, then see what Brian has to say, and then we'll close out with our guest. Brian?
First of all, the belief...
Your name is from Brian, so we'll go to the next caller. I'm only doing that because people can identify themselves really, and when they call more than once and then use a separate name, I know what they're going to do. We'll go to Kalonji next. Kalonji, you're on the air.
Yes, I think that everything that's been said is right on point and is very poignant. I also think that we need to recognize the pulpit for what it really means or really does, and I think that's to gain material gain from those who are unaware of what they're doing to manipulate society. I think that it should be used for political reasons and to also galvanize support that we can come together and be a free people, because it's necessary for all humanity to be one. And in order to do that, we got to be free.
Kalonji, thanks so much for your call. So let's go back for a second. We only have a few minutes left. And I really just want to come back to the power of what might happen this weekend, starting with you, Kimberly, and going down the line with our guests before we have to take a break here in just 3 minutes, to a sense of what you want to say to our listeners about what they will receive at this conference and what comes out of it for you. Kimberly?
Well, I would like to believe that what they will receive this weekend is enlightenment, education, maybe a little entertainment, because, you have to have all of those.
Yes, you do.
And I'm just looking forward to, being able to show people again that we have more in common than we have differences. And look at the historical aspect of what we're bringing to the table and what has been achieved and what can be achieved. So, we have a long way to go, but we actually need one another. So that's the main thing that I want to bring, to the table this weekend.
Delman?
Yeah, I just want to echo those sentiments. I think this conference is going to help us to recognize our common humanity. There's too much demonization of people who have different thoughts, different beliefs, different practices, different traditions in the public square today. And if we're going to make progress going forward in order to address mass incarceration, the challenges of crime in our communities, public education, we're going to have a narrative that helps us to see our common humanity rather than emphasizing those minor things that distinguish us.
Joe?
I couldn't agree more. Common humanity and powerful thinking. That's what we want. We cannot address these issues without powerful thinking. Simple thinking is just not going to do it.
Well, I do want to thank, we just heard Dr. Joe Pettit, who's Associate Professor of Philosophy and Religious Studies here at Morgan State University, the Reverend Delman Coates, Senior Pastor of the Mount Enum Baptist Church in Clinton, Maryland, and candidate for Lieutenant Governor in Maryland here, on the ticket with Delegate Heather Mazier, and, of course, Kimberly Veal, Vice President of the Black Skeptics Group, who will be here this weekend as well. And I want to thank Dr. Sikivu Hutchinson, who joined us earlier, who's Executive Director of the Black Skeptics Group and author of the book Moral Combat, Black Atheists, Gender, Politics, and Values Wars, to join them this weekend for the Philosophical Atheism and Communities of Faith Conference held here at Morgan State University this Saturday, at the University Student Center, room 212, from 9 to 5 p.m. on Saturday. You can go to get in touch with Anika Simpson. That's Anika, A-N-I-K-A, .Simpson, at morgan.edu. That information will be on our website at steinershow.org as well. I want to thank you all for being here. This was a great conversation. Look forward to having this again, a larger conversation with this and some others. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you, Mark.
Having me.
Thank you.
Take care. We're going to take a very brief break, and when we come back from this very brief break, we are going to tackle what the Supreme Court just did with Michigan. So please, stay with us.
People!